Shrink Wrap Radio number 524, The Rise of Online Counseling and Therapy with Clay Cockrell, LCSW.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Today, my guest is Clay Cockrell, LCSW, founder of the Online Counseling Directory and host of the Online Counseling Podcast. We'll be discussing the current status of online counseling and psychotherapy, as well as their future. For more information about Clay Cockrell, LCSW, please see our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. Before we go to the interview, let me mention that this week's featured article in The Neuropsychotherapist is A Quantum Field Theory of Neuropsychotherapy by Ernest Rossi. You'll find it at neuropsychotherapist.com, which is the beautifully illustrated online monthly magazine for psychotherapists and anyone else interested in the intersection between the latest neuroscience findings and psychotherapy. I want you to go to neuropsychotherapist.com and get your free introductory issue today. And I'm hoping that will inspire you to support their superlative work by subscribing to it. Today's show is also brought to you by Bombas.com. Save 20% off your first order at www.getbombas.com/shrinkwrapradio. Now, here's the interview. Clay Cockrell, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be interviewed. What comes to mind is on talk radio where the caller says, long-time listener, first-time caller. So I'm a big fan.
Great. So you are a long-time listener to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Oh,
that's wonderful. That's wonderful. In fact, I know you've got a podcast. I think you may have communicated to me somewhere that maybe you were at least partly inspired to do your own podcast by this show. Am I forcing that or not?
No, that is absolutely true. Because when I'm just inspired by what you are bringing to the field, and I think we need more of that. And we don't, many people in private practice, we get isolated. So this is a chance to kind of get inside other private practices, other approaches, what's happening in the field currently. So when I came up with the idea of I wanted to talk to people about online counseling, I thought podcast might be the way to go.
Yeah. Well, geez, I should snip out that part of what you said and use it as a promo or something. So it really is great to get to meet you in this way and have you on the show. And part it's due to our mutual Australian friend and podcaster, Amy Fellman, who was touring through the U.S. For a couple of weeks with her husband this summer. And she suggested that I interview you about your work promoting online counseling and therapy. And so I've been listening to some of your podcasts, and I must say, very impressed by your podcast. They're really easy to listen to. You're a great interviewer. The whole thing just feels really natural. And you've had wonderful guests. So I've been very impressed.
Thank you very much. It certainly is a learning curve. When all day long I'm in a therapy session, when you're interviewing someone, it's just a different approach. So I've got a learning curve, but I'm certainly having fun doing it.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, it certainly is. Well, maybe the place for us to start is for you to let our audience know, first of all, what is it that you're doing? What are we talking about here?
Well, I am very passionate about how our field is changing and going online. So this is about online counseling. And how do we as psychotherapists connect with our clients using technology and kind of grow our practices and become an online counselor? And in that vein, I've started the podcast, but I've also started a directory at onlinecounseling.com where therapists can list their practices. And then if someone is looking for, specifically looking for someone online, they can find someone and know that they are, their credentials and certifications have all been checked, and they get to know them. They can put up a picture, very much like Psychology Today has a directory for face-to-face therapists.
Right.
We're hoping to become the Psychology Today of online counseling.
Yeah, yeah. And so what do you see as the need for online counseling and therapy?
Every industry, I think, out there has been upturned by, I don't know if that's the correct phrase, but
I know what you mean,
by, by technology. If yeah. you look at books with Amazon, newspapers, media, film, music, certainly. And it was just a matter of time for our industry to be affected. And I think particularly with millennials, younger people who have grown up with the internet, they're very comfortable with connecting with people online. And more they're looking for their therapist to be online, whether it's for convenience or need.
One of the things that you've talked about on your show, on your interviews, is that this has global reach, so that there's a real need in countries like India and other countries where there are very few therapists. And so this is potentially a way that people in those kinds of places could be seen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I went to the Psychotherapy Networker Symposium this year and had a booth. I'd never been a vendor before. And almost to a person, people would come up and want to know about online counseling and had never thought about the idea of counseling internationally. And just to throw out a few statistics, there is one mental health professional for every 400,000 people in India. Wow. They have a massive mental health problem. And English is their official language, one of two, and they're technologically savvy. They're a growing economy. But then look to China, where there's 2.4 mental health providers for every 1 million people. There's another booming economy.
Yeah.
And then if you look to the United Kingdom, in the UK, there are long waiting lists for the National Health Service to get counseling. And even after perhaps 30 to 45 days on a waiting list, you'll be given a booklet or perhaps an online program to go through to talk about your anxiety or depression. You're not connected to a therapist. So and this is across the board in Australia, in Canada. So there's a global need out there. And this is a way for therapists to grow their practices.
Yeah. So it's kind of a win-win potentially for those clients for whom this would be a really good thing to have some access, because they had no way to have access before, and certainly a win for the many therapists out there who are hoping to grow their practices.
Right.
Because an interview that I did just, it may have been, two back, was about the decline of therapy visits in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays with that. And you were talking about the way that digital technology has, I think you said, overturned or disrupted music and books. And I wanted to pick up on that because, in fact, it has been very disruptive. And there are other things that we can look at where digital technology is really just changing things, not always in a good way. For example, I was reading in the newspaper today about Palo Alto, California, you know, it's part of Silicon Valley, and how restaurants are really having a hard time making it because of the influx of workers who've come to Silicon Valley to work at Apple Computer and Google and so on. Mm-hmm. And so it's driven up the prices of housing and rentals. The restaurants can't afford to pay the rent on the restaurants anymore. Plus, they can't hire people because their chefs and so on are finding that they can make more money, get better security by working at Apple and Google and so on. It's totally, it's not a good scene in terms of, you know, what it's doing to that community. And this is coming from somebody who is pretty much have been a lifelong technophile. So now I'm always just kind of alert to look at and wonder about, well, what's the shadow side of this? And so it'll be interesting to follow, I think, and to see if there is some kind of a shadow side that maybe we don't see at this point.
Absolutely. I think that there is good and bad, and our field needs to approach this. And I think we are in a very conscientious and thoughtful way, but there's a learning curve.
Yeah, that's what actually struck me about your podcast and what you're doing. Despite Amy Fellman's recommendation that I interview you, I was kind of dragging my feet a little bit, thinking, oh, this sounds like kind of some kind of huckster idea, you know, this guy's going to make a bunch of money. And I just, my initial impression before any contact or exposure with you, right, this is my own shadow projection, was kind of negative. And but then the thing that really turned me around very quickly was starting to listen to your podcast. And right away, I hear you talking about ethics and having high standards and the importance of that. And so I was won over right away.
So, well, thank you. I'm glad.
I really value that about what you're doing.
I think that I'm getting that response from across the board. At this symposium we went to, and my wife and I went down together, and we set up a booth talking about online counseling and the directory. And prior to the opening the vendor hall, all the therapists were in conference, right? They were listening to different talks and getting their continuing education credits. And the speaker just prior to opening the vendor hall was the dangers of online counseling.
Oh, great.
So they had just listened to 2 hours about the dangers about this, and then they open up the vendor hall, and there I am with my smiling face. They thought I was a snake.
Wow. You know, I've mentioned to a few people that I was going to do this interview, and again, there was that same kind of reaction as red flags. Oh, this sounds, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this isn't going to be a good thing. I see you've got a little bit of an uphill climb.
I do. Uh-huh. I do. And it's interesting. When I talk to therapists who are doing this, almost every one of them said, I started because my client needed it. My client came to me, whether it was a student who was going off to college and they wanted to continue their sessions, mm-hmm. or it was a business person who was going to be away and wanted to continue sessions, or someone who was actually moving and didn't want to discontinue. And they came to the therapist. So this is client-driven sometimes, and uh-huh. said, will you do this? Will you look into it? And so the therapist then has to go and research it, because I think we all, when faced with change, we get a little fearful, a little concerned, don't want to lose our licenses. Is this a thing? But once you start doing the research and you learn how to do it ethically, correctly, following all your association guidelines and the state law, you can do this, and it can be incredibly effective.
Now, you have or had, I don't know if you're still doing this, you were doing online marital counseling. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, I continue. I have a pretty full practice at online marital counseling, and I've been pretty open. I've been doing this for about 6 years.
Okay.
And jumped into the deep end and did it all wrong. I did everything incorrectly.
How does one do it wrong?
Such as I use Skype. Because everyone's just, it's easy. Everybody knows about Skype. A lot of people have Skype accounts, and I can see my client and hear my client. It's just like they're right here in my office. However, Skype is not compliant with our HIPAA law. If you are a mental health provider, you need to use a video conference tool that is HIPAA compliant. And it can get pretty technical, but essentially what happens, it's not that Skype is not encrypted. It's safe. It's encrypted. But they do not offer a business associate agreement. And if you are a therapist, you need to have a business associate agreement with your provider. And there, and on the directory, we list all the HIPAA compliant platforms, or a lot of them, that we recommend.
Excellent.
And the great thing is that these platforms were designed for therapy. And some of them are free. Some of them is a low monthly cost, $9, $14, something like that. But they're designed for therapists so that, I don't know if you, how long it's been since you've used Skype, but it cuts out. Sometimes the video freezes up or the audio freezes up. These other platforms buffer the information as it goes through the broadband so that maybe it won't be HD quality, but you'll never notice it. They'll just reduce the quality of the video so that you have a clean and clear connection.
Yeah,
so
right now we're using a platform called Zoom.us, which I've started using within the last couple of months instead of Skype. I had one, often the Skype interviews, they've gotten interrupted. We had to reconnect. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the audio or the video gets so wonky, you can hardly understand each other. And Zoom has been much more solid. And I went on to see if they were HIPAA compliant, and I guess they hadn't been, but I found online that Zoom claims that they are. So I don't know quite how you... There's something about this user agreement. If mm-hmm. I wanted to do it, would I have to contact Zoom and say, put me in the user agreement, or how would that work?
That's right. You request a business associate agreement. Uh-huh. And many of these places, like WeCounsel and Doxy.me, Theralink, VC, they know what you're talking about. Sometimes it's right there on their homepage and you can request it. But it's just a document that says that you're in agreement and that they're going to keep all the information confidential. And it just is crossing your T's and dotting your I's for the HIPAA compliance. So a lot of therapists are using Skype. And the thing is Skype has become the name for the product. It's like Band-Aid.
Yeah,
it's
Kleenex. Yeah.
Kleenex, exactly. Yeah. So I'm going to Skype you. Skype counseling, Skype therapy. But actual Skype is not compliant. And I see so many therapists out there that are using Skype because it's convenient, and they don't realize that they're not actually being compliant with HIPAA when they do it.
By the way, do you remember what HIPAA stands for? I don't. I know it's an acronym. People are in other countries may be going, what's all this HIPAA?
Hippopotamus? that's a great question. I hope I get this right, but I think it's Health Information and Portability Act.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll go with that. Now, you said that when you started out, you were doing everything wrong, You did say everything wrong. I'm sure it wasn't everything. Is there anything else that comes to mind other than the non-HIPAA compliant platform?
Absolutely. And there are two big things that therapists need to be aware of. One we've already covered is to make sure that you have a compliant encrypted platform that you're using. The second is the state licensure issue. Mm-hmm. It used to be thought that therapy happened where the therapist sits. So I'm here in New York, as you can probably hear from the background noise. I apologize for that. I'm here in New York. I'm licensed in New York. I'm sitting in New York. I'm covered if my client from Kansas contacts me and wants to have counseling. That's a myth. Every state licensure board out there has defined therapy as happening where the client sits. So if someone from Kansas contacted me, I would need to be licensed in Kansas, which is frustrating. I think that the state licensing boards, they are there to protect their citizens, to make sure that the providers have met their requirements, mm-hmm. taken their test, paid them that yearly fee. Mm-hmm. So some of this is money driven. But I think that national licensure ultimately is where we're going. But right now, you need to be licensed where your client sits. So that was one of the big things that we had to develop when we launched this directory, that if a client came looking for a male therapist that does cognitive behavioral treatment and specializes in depression, they also are asked, where do you live? What state do you live? And if they say, I live in Maryland, they're only going to get results from therapists licensed in Maryland. So it kind of helps with that connection.
Interesting. Yeah. One of the podcasts that I listened to, one of yours, was with a lawyer. I guess he's a therapist and a lawyer.
Yes. Eric Strom.
Yeah. And evidently a lot of his work has moved in the direction of advising people who are moving in this direction. Mm-hmm. And I'll need to listen to that again. I didn't get quite such a dire picture from that interview. It sounded like there was a little bit more freedom depending upon what states were involved.
There are some loopholes. For example, I think it's in North Carolina. They passed a law saying that you could, if you are licensed somewhere in the United States, you could see one of their citizens, but for only 30 days a year. And I think the idea was that if your client was traveling to North Carolina, you could continue to see them. But they forgot to put the word consecutive in there, in the law. So you could see a client once a week for 30 weeks in North Carolina and still be compliant. So there's some wonky things out there. I've just been told, and of course I haven't confirmed this, but in Pennsylvania, they do not have restrictions on licensure. But there's a great document out there, and I'll send you the link. An attorney, a law firm in Washington, D.C., did a massive research project. Mm. And they're Epstein, Green, and Becker. They went to every state and looked at the licensure and state boards for psychologists, social workers, counselors, marriage and family therapists, and psychiatrists, and said, what are your requirements for doing counseling in this state for each of those things? And it's a massive document. It's gold. I've been looking for this for years, and somebody just emailed this to me. So I'll send that link. But if you want to know what your state or your client's state regulations are, it's all in this document. So it's really, this is clearing things up for the first time.
That's good, because it really seems like clarity is going to be very important here. And, you know, nobody wants to run afoul of the law.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, so people come to me and said, well, you know, I can't counsel outside my state. And my response is, there's a lot of people in your state. This is not a limiting thing. Even Rhode Island, there's a lot of people in Rhode Island, our smallest state, that are going to be in need, and that you can grow your practice within your state. But then what people don't think about is the international factor. There are no regulations. Now, in general, there are no regulations preventing you from doing counseling for someone outside the United States. You just can't do some counseling with a state you're not licensed in.
Yeah.
So those expats living in Dubai, China, English speakers around the world, or if you're multilingual, that opens up your practice even more.
Yeah.
So again, there is a world in need of you, of our services, and I talk to a lot of therapists who have a small practice, and it's like, I really just, you know, I live in a small town and I can't grow my practice. This is a way of doing that.
Yeah. Let's just step back for a moment and talk about your background for doing this work. Tell us a bit about your training and then how you got the idea and all that.
Sure. I'm originally from Kentucky, and my wife and I moved to New York in 1997, and she's an actress, so we needed to be here.
Ah, that explains that part of it. I was wondering.
So, and I needed to start a practice, and I did. And my entire career has always been about convenience for making therapy as convenient as possible, because there's too many roadblocks to someone beginning this process. So my idea was to do something unusual at the beginning, is that I walked with my clients instead of meeting in an office. Uh-huh. That I would come, we would meet in either in Central Park or down at Battery Park and near Wall Street, and we would walk for the session. And people loved it. They loved the idea. New Yorkers, we don't get to be outside much. We go from our small little apartment to a subway car to then our cubicle office. We don't get out a lot. So, and we are walkers, though. So the idea of combining these two things, a counseling session and walking, just really took off. The other thing, was that I love to travel. My wife and I, we love to travel. And as a private practitioner, if you're not working, you're not earning. So this was, creating an online practice was a way for me to be able to travel and still work. Hmm. So I was able to spend a month in Rome and see
my client. Yeah.
Whole month in Rome, but I would see, we would go out, and because of the time difference, I would do things in the morning, and then I would, you know, see clients in the evening in our little Airbnb apartment. And so a lot of people are beginning this because they want to travel, and this is a way for them to continue to work and travel.
Wow, that's fascinating. And what about your relationship to technology? Did you were you a technology aficionado? Or
I was not. I came to this kicking and screaming. I didn't want to do it. I thought that it was going to be too complicated. What is a Skype account when I was using Skype? And where do I put the camera? What about lighting? And how do I market this? Nobody's going to want it. And, you know, all the negative stuff that comes up for all of us when we try to entertain that entrepreneurial spirit. But and this is my advice to a lot of therapists, is go slow. Educate yourself. Start small. And there's no rush here. Just gradually get your feet wet. And I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the immediacy of it. I fell in love with the effectiveness of it, because there's something about connecting with my client in their home environment, in the comfort. They're sitting on their couch or they're sitting in their office. They didn't have to fight traffic and find parking and take off work in the middle of the day and come see and then walk into my office all frazzled. And now they're in a foreign environment. And now we're going to get vulnerable and open up and talk about pain. No, it was just so much more effective working with people when they were comfortable already and incredibly convenient. And then when you start looking at the marriage counseling aspect of it, many times my couples lived apart, whether they were fighting and the husband was in a hotel room, or one of them was deployed for the military, or they were working abroad because of contract work. And you could create three screens.
Yeah.
And we could, this was the only way they could do counseling is to be online.
Yeah, I never thought about that. And your point about convenience, actually, it resonates with another part of me. Another hat that I wear is that of a market research consultant. And there's been a big movement in the world of market research to do what is sometimes referred to as ethnographic studies, where you've got a camera in the person. And it used to be that a camera crew from the client company and the client and the focus group moderator and so on, they would all go to the person's home in a small invasion, right?
Yeah.
And, okay, just ignore us and go ahead and have your family dinner, you know, and we just want to see how it works. And, you know, that had some utility, but now, since everybody's got smartphones and they can just kind of, you know, prop it up on the table, or they can go over to their medicine cabinet and say, okay, here are the products that we're using. You know, I just did a study for women and their hair care, where we needed to talk about the products and so on. One of which was a product that I had never heard of called Gorilla Snot.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Doesn't that, in a way, it sounds so modern and great, you know, as a way to keep your hair in place? Gorilla snot.
Okay. Yeah. Man, I have to look at that.
Yeah. So this is actually a big move in the field of market research for the same reasons. So instead of having a person go to the big city where the market research focus group rooms are and then meet with a bunch of strangers in a group and so on, this can all be done now through these online tools.
Wow.
And so one of the things I do is use the same tool that we're talking with right now to conduct a group. In the Gorilla Snot group, we actually had 16 people in the room. And it wasn't really all about Gorilla Snot. but you can actually do group, you know, do group. I don't know if anybody's trying to do group work.
They are. There are group therapy sessions out there online. And it's the technology is there. It supports it. Jeff Simons over in the UK with the Online Counseling Hub has started an online counseling television channel with Mimi.tv. And you can have, I want to say, 6 to 8 participants.
Mm-hmm. That's typical.
As speakers.
Yeah.
But you could have, if you wanted to do a webinar, it's almost limitless as how many people could observe.
Could watch, right.
With permission. So you could have a larger group and then only pull the ones that want to, in that moment talking, you pull them up on, quote, stage in one of these 8 slots. That's just one of the technologies out there. But there are technologies to support group therapy online.
Well, that's interesting because I'm under the impression that group therapy has sort of declined in terms of the availability of it. And I'm not sure why that's the case, but this
might
sure be
why
another way.
Either. I do know I've talked with a few of my clients that are in sex addiction treatment. Men with porn and illicit sex addiction, that to have that support group with experts in this field. And if you're living in, I'm just going to pick a state, North Dakota, perhaps in a rural area,
yeah.
Are you going to have access to an expert in this particular field? I don't know. But if you go online, you're going to be able to find that support and you're going to be able to find experts that are trained in this to help you.
Fascinating.
So, And you used a word earlier as a tool. This is a tool for therapists to use. There are therapists who they have just a part-time online practice and a full-time face-to-face practice. And this is a tool for if somebody, single mom, can't find a babysitter, I'm not going to be able to make this session today. Well, let's go online so you don't have to skip a week. There are others that they're all online. They don't have a face-to-face practice. They work from home. And they follow the rules. And this is just a tool, one of our many tools as therapists to connect with our clients.
Yeah. Well, as you sort of, first of all, I wanted to ask you, your voice is so great, your voice and style. Have you ever worked in radio?
I did. I did, not in radio, but when I first came to New York, someone encouraged me to do voiceover work for commercials and what have you.
Yeah.
So I had some hilarious experiences doing voiceover work. It really was not for me. But
well, let's hear
myself
about a hilarious experience that convinced you that it was not for you. That's too juicy to pass up.
Okay. Well, I will say this, that so there is a state that the name of the state I cannot pronounce. I've got a mental block. This is the state where Boston is.
Yeah, I was going to say Massachusetts. I would think that would be it.
and you said it lovely. Mm-hmm. So I can't say that. I get tripped and my wife makes my friends make fun of me. So I go on an audition and they never tell you what the product is until you get in the room. And I get to the casting director and they hand me this sheet of paper for the product. And the product was a bank located in that state. And I went, oh, I'm in trouble. So the casting director comes out, wants me to go into the recording booth. And I said, I don't want to waste your time. I can't say this word. And she was very lovely. And she said, oh, no, I'll coach you through it. I'm sure it's not that bad. Well, okay. So I go in to the booth and I say something to, and welcome to the National Bank of Massachusetts. And it comes out Massachusetts. Yeah. And she worked with me for two or three times. And she said, you know what? You really can't say that word, can you? I can't. Wow. I'm sorry. I can't.
Wow. So what an experience.
That was my voiceover, my short-lived voiceover career.
Yeah. Well, as you've tried to push this idea forward to be a kind of champion and a trailblazer, have you run into any obstacles?
Yes, I think fear. And it's interesting. We as psychotherapists, we work with our clients all the time to work through fear, anxiety, to process change. But when we come up against it, we're human too.
Yeah.
We freeze up and we're resistant to change. And I'll look at my own prejudice. Someone was talking to me about email therapy. Now, that's online therapy too. But when I thought, I went, oh, that's not real therapy. That's not real counseling and connection. But then I got to interview Carol Francis Smith in the UK, who's an expert on email therapy, and it's called asynchronous therapy, right, in that it does not happen synchronously. So that it's incredibly effective. It's just different. It's text-based. The client is going to write out their thoughts, and you think about the different ways that they can do that, and how to express yourself. You can use italics, different fonts, emojis. You can really express yourself, of course, are writers. And if you are a writer, and then the therapist at a set time will respond to that and email the client back. And she gave the example of a college student, a guy in London, away from home, not dealing. And he would never go to the university counseling services. He didn't have time, for one thing, and it was embarrassing, but he could, in the privacy of his dorm room, write out his thoughts, his concerns, his dreams, and get this relationship. Now, you have to have special training on how to do this and how to connect and build rapport, but that was my own prejudice until someone explained it to me of how it could be effective. I went, oh, I see that. So I think many of us are afraid of this way of going online. We don't want to get in trouble. But I always say information is what you need. Once you have information, it combats the fear. And again, there are many people out there wanting your services. I'm talking to the listener. If you're a psychotherapist, they need your services. And this is the only way sometimes that they can. And if you think about the rural people in Alaska and North Dakota, and from my home state in Kentucky, there is a therapist that I interviewed in Florida, lovely woman, Janine Herskovitz, who is a specialist dealing with parents of autistic children. And she is the mother of an 18-year-old autistic boy. She has lived with autism for 18 years. She specializes in the crisis and the things that parents of autistic children go through. She is a wealth of information, a very talented therapist. But, you know, there are people that don't have access to her because they live in a small town and they wouldn't be able to connect. Through online counseling, they can't connect with her.
Wow, that's an incredible resource. I think that this interview is going to inspire a lot of my listeners either to seek this kind of therapy for themselves or to, if they're therapists already, to begin to move in that direction. Let's go back to the ethics. I was saying I was impressed by the degree to which you have addressed various ethical concerns in your podcast interviews. Maybe you could take us through some of the ethical considerations in relation to online counseling and therapy.
Sure. Well, one of the first things that come to mind is that many states require age of consent, so that if you're under 18, you need to have a consent. So you need to be aware of what your state guidelines and your professional organization, what those guidelines are. And many of them are, just about all of them, are going to be the same, whether it's face-to-face or it's online. So you want to follow that. You also want to evaluate in that first introduction, is this person appropriate for online counseling? Is this someone who is going to be savvy enough to work the tools, which, you know, it's very, you send a link and you pop right up and you're connected. But there are some people that are not going to be tech savvy and be able to work that. So that's one consideration. Another consideration is this person really appropriate for talk therapy? Are they do they need medication? Are they decompensating? Is this something that you probably wouldn't see face to face? Of course, one of the big things that come to mind is, are they at risk? Is this a suicidal patient? Is this someone who may harm themselves or someone else? What would you do if someone 500 miles away from you says, I'm suicidal? So in your informed consent, you want to make sure that you have information and that you have an emergency contact, that you have the telephone number of their local police department. Mm-hmm. It's just these small precautions to make sure that you are being ethical. And each of the major professional organizations, the APA, the ACA, NASW for us social workers, have come up with guidelines. I encourage everyone to look at those, because we might be a little behind, but we're catching up on how to do this in an ethical manner.
I suspect it won't be long before, if it doesn't already exist, some sort of national professional association. Is that something that's in the works, or are you going to start one, or what?
For online counselors?
Yeah.
There isn't, although Jamie Stacks has started the National Association for Counselors in Private Practice. So it's counselors across the board in private practice. And I think it's going to be a wonderful resource. But we're partnering to kind of be the educational wing of that for online, for the therapists who are interested in online work. But there is, you bring up an interesting, the distance credentialing, distance counseling credential, which is a national credential for counselors who get this extra training in distance counseling. Now, it's not recognized by the state. It doesn't let you cross state, but many states are saying you have to have this credential in order to work within your state. And there are a few, like the Online Therapy Institute and telehealth.org, and there are courses that we can take to get just a little bit more education on how to do online counseling and do it ethically and do it correctly and effectively, because it is a little different. So that little extra training can really help.
What about the flip side of possible? Are there any unethical practices, practitioners, or organizations that you're aware of? I mean, anybody could just say, hey, I've got a camera, I've got a computer, and I could put myself on a directory somewhere and hold myself out to be doing therapy, or call it counseling, call it something different. Call it coaching.
Absolutely. Call it coaching. And I think that a lot of therapists are saying, I'm just going to call this coaching, and that allow me to cross state lines, allow me to use Skype. But it's not coaching. It's counseling. Life coaching is a very valuable thing, but it's not counseling. So if you're doing counseling, you need to call it counseling. So are there unethical people out there? Sure, of course. And I think that the population does not check enough to make sure that their therapist is licensed, does not have any outstanding complaints. I've been in practice for 20 years, and I've never had one client ask for my license number. I doubt any of them looked me up to find out if I was really licensed or just, you know, some guy that rented an office here in Manhattan and called himself. We need to be diligent about our providers across the board.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. We've talked about legal issues a bit. How are the professional organizations reacting to this development? You know, there are organizations for marriage family therapists. There's the two different APAs, the psychologists and the psychiatrists. How are they reacting? Do they have task forces that are investigating, or what's going on?
Absolutely. And I think that initially they drug their heels. They just said, don't do it. Across the board, don't do this.
Yeah.
Their members said, wait a minute. We're going to do it. We are doing it. We need guidance from you. And so each of them have come out with task forces. And it's, you know, it's a thorny issue, especially when you start looking at psychiatrists and writing prescriptions. But they are slowly coming up with guidelines and then revising the guidelines. I think APA was out front. American Psychological Association was out front with putting out the guidelines. The ACA with counselors, licensed professional counselors, they certainly have been there. NASW is late to the game a bit, in my opinion. But they are certainly thorough. Just a month ago, they put out a 72-page document on their guidelines for technology and counseling. And it hasn't been approved yet. They just put it out for discussion. But it's a very thorough document. Hmm. And so they are late to the game, but they're coming to it just because we have to. The field is changing dramatically. And I think the members of the organizations are demanding, we want guidelines and we want protection. And of course, liability insurance is trying to figure out how to cash in on this. When I first started, my liability insurance said, yeah, it doesn't matter. You know, you're covered, whether you're sitting in your office, walking in the park, or doing online. Well, now they're saying, well, here's an extra coverage that we're going to give you for, you know, a small monthly fee if you're going to work online. But it's not cost prohibitive.
Okay, well, speaking of money, what's the status of insurance reimbursement? I would think that would be a biggie.
Yeah, that's where we're going to get a lot of leadership, is from the insurance companies, and it goes from state to state. The VA has been doing this for a long time. They have a wonderful database and system for working with veterans online, and they've really been able, and I think that most people know there is a massive mental health crisis with our veterans coming home, and they have developed wonderful programs and a lot of great technology. So they were leaders on this. And it really depends, though, for insurance, Medicare, Medicaid. It depends on your state. It depends on your plan. But they are coming along. And there are more and more insurance companies that are covering this. But I'm imagining that they're also going to want to make sure that the provider has this additional training, the distance counseling credential.
So I imagine that's something you're going to keep your finger on the pulse of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that that's going to be a big change. But you bring up a kind of an issue if we want to talk about is fees.
I wanted to talk about that, yeah.
a lot of therapists have come to me, and I never thought of this. Like, is it fair to charge the same fee if you're a full-fee therapist, not using insurance? The same fee for face-to-face as I do online. And I'm baffled by that. But I guess I see where it's coming from. And it may be, you know, reflective back to the therapist's own money issues. But I think that we should be valued for our work. And that people are paying for our time, whether that time is online or whether it's face-to-face. In fact, I could argue if they're saying maybe I should have a reduced cost for my online sessions, because why not have an increased cost for your online counseling sessions because of the added convenience? The patient doesn't have to pay for parking. He doesn't have to pay gas to come see you. I don't think anybody's actually paying more for their online sessions, but I think that you need to pay for it's the hour. It's the 50-minute slot, not for the modality.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering about that because there is a certain amount of complaining out in the world. And this is one of the theories of why maybe psychotherapy has declined, is that it's too expensive. And so I was wondering, will this be a force to make it less expensive or not? It doesn't sound like you think it is.
Well, I think that it's most therapists have a sliding scale fee for those clients that are in need. What this does is it opens up your, for lack of a better word, target audience. More people can access your care. So that if you have a full fee client at noon and 2, and you've got that open slot at 1 o'clock, you can take a reduced fee client online. It's very easy. And perhaps this is going to bring down some of the cost. So.
Yeah, okay. Let's see here. What if somebody, you've kind of touched on this, but what if one of my listeners wanted to do remote counseling or therapy? Any recommendations as to where they'd get the training to do so?
Yes, there's the Online Therapy Institute. There is telehealth.org. Dr. Marlene Mayhew is a leader in this field and has been a leader for 10, 15 years, like at the dawn of the internet. She was there thinking, how's this going to affect counseling? And so she's been, she's a wonderful force of nature, really. And so she has a training program. There is a training program in the UK that Kate Anthony, and I forget her partner's name, but there are courses out there, and we've listed those on our directory at onlinecounseling.com. We have the therapist toolbox, and you can get the recommendations for which platforms are compliant with HIPAA, where you can get additional training, you know, what are your state licensure issues that you need to know. All the information is right there.
Well, that's really good. Well, I'm wondering if, as we begin to wind down here, is there anything that we haven't touched on that we should have, or anything that you would like to put out there?
Sure. I think that there are things that people don't think about because we're therapists. We're not TV performers. And one of them is just the logistics. You want to make sure that you are not lit from the back. You need to have a light facing you so that it doesn't look like you're just this black blob. You want to have a good internet connection. That you have a built-in camera, I think, is very helpful so that you can kind of make eye contact with your client as much as possible, which I've just heard about this. It's in beta test, but it's catcheye.com, and they have developed technology so that, you know, when you're connecting online, we're not really making eye contact here. It sort of looks like we are, but because of the way the camera is situated, eye contact is very important in therapy. So they've developed some kind of program that uses facial recognition and changes the positions of the eyes so that it looks like you're actually making eye contact. And I think that I've learned after doing this for a long time, if I sit at a certain distance away from the computer, even though I'm looking at you in the screen, it looks like I'm making eye contact with you. If I get a little too close, it looks like I'm looking down at my screen.
You know, I got close to so that people could see my face better, but how are you experiencing my eyes as we've been doing this? Because there's a real, on my Mac, I've got a 27-inch screen here. So the little camera is at the very top of the bezel, and I've struggled to shrink the video and push it up as high as I can towards that.
Yes.
And then I've got some notes beneath that. But right now I'm looking at you. Is it obvious that I'm looking down? I'm looking at the picture of you. But do I need to be a bit further back or...
No, it does look like you're looking down just a little bit, and it's startling that when it looks like you're making eye contact, but if you look directly at the camera, you can tell a complete difference.
Now I'm looking at the camera.
Yeah,
now
that's you, real eye contact. And I think that in the therapeutic process, that's that magical connection that we're looking for. And this technology apparently, and again, I haven't tested it yet, but is going to help with that. But little things that you're just going to learn by doing is how far does the monitor need to be away from you? What is your background? Right now, I try to keep a neutral background and not have anything personal behind me or distracting. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that nobody's going to overhear, just like in a face-to-face session, that nobody in the outer office is going to be able to hear me. I want to make sure that my client, wherever they're sitting, they're someplace private. I've had people want to have a therapy session while they're sitting in Starbucks. I'm like, no, you really need to be in a private, safe, secure place that, confidentiality is not going to be broken. Mm-hmm. So it's things like that, the logistical ends that is just a little bit of testing, get online with your friends, play with it until you feel connected.
Yeah.
That's one of the things to be considered, I think.
Yeah. Where do you see this going in the future? I kind of prompt the answer, I think, with my gesture.
Yes, I think that in 5 years we're not going to call this online counseling anymore. This is just how counseling is going to be. They're going to look back at us and go, "What was the big deal?" Of course, we're going to use safe, secure video platforms to connect with clients. I think that the licensure issue from state to state is probably going to be resolved, which is going to open up a wonderful market. I think that this is just how the field, how the industry is going to go, and we need to play catch up. One of the things I forgot to mention is that we're donating a majority of our proceeds from the directory to nonprofit arts, so that I think that there are a lot of people jumping into the field to make money.
Yeah.
This is a site for therapists, developed by a therapist, and we're going to have a profit, hopefully, one day, but we're also going to try to give back to nonprofit arts.
Well, this has been fun, Clay. I'm glad that at last we get to connect, and I want to thank you for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
As you heard me say, I'm very impressed by the way Clay has approached this still somewhat controversial topic of online counseling and therapy. The directory that he's developed at onlinecounseling.com, along with the various resources he's posted there, will be very helpful as this nascent approach continues to grow. I'm impressed by his notion that it will make particular sense for millennials and subsequent digital natives as a preferred means of communication. Of course, it also occurs to me as I say this that one could argue more or less the opposite, that the thing digital natives need most is more face-to-face interaction, not less. However, I also find compelling his arguments about the huge need for mental health services in parts of the world where they are scant or non-existent. I'll be very interested to learn your reactions, whether as potential client or therapist. Having said that, I must confess that Clay's work has also got me thinking about reactivating my California psychologist license. It occurs to me that maybe Shrink Wrap Radio would be a ready-made marketing device for my services as an online therapist. I wonder if that is so. In fact, I'm going to post a poll in the right-hand sidebar on shrinkwrapradio.com asking if you would be likely to be interested in my offering that sort of service or not. So I hope you'll be candid, and I hope that you'll go to the site and take that poll to give me a little feedback.
Hi, Dr. Dave. This is Ben Tai calling from London in England. I've been listening to Shrink Wrap Radio now for over a year, and it's been such an entertaining learning experience for me that I was recently compelled to become a regular donor. I really appreciate the effort you put into each episode, and collectively the whole catalogue is such a rich and valuable resource. I've been working as a business consultant now for over 20 years, and next year marks the start of a second career for me as I begin the foundation year of a diploma in transpersonal psychotherapy and counseling at the CCPE here in London. Listening to the podcast has been a tremendous grounding in the field and led to so many interesting and valuable books and online resources written or presented by your guests. I do hope that other listeners will also make a one-off or regular donation so that we can continue to enjoy the program for many years to come. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Dave. Keep up the great work, and thanks again.
Well, big thanks to you, Ben Tai, there in London. I really appreciate your support and encouraging others to keep Shrink Wrap Radio alive and well. If you're not already a financial supporter, I hope you'll join Ben as a donor. As I mentioned at the beginning, we do have a relatively new sponsor, Bombas Socks, and I've been an ongoing customer of theirs for several years. Why? Because of the bright colors and distinctive patterns, the fact that they provide socks for both men and women in various lengths, and now children, and even little shorties that are great for summer tennis. Also, I particularly appreciate their philanthropic commitment to providing a pair of socks to a homeless person for every pair you order. As a matter of fact, I just received notice that they have donated more than 1 million pairs of socks to the needy. If you're a listener in the U.S., you can save 20% off your first order by going to getbombas.com/shrinkwrapradio. And Bombas is spelled B-O-M-B-A-S. Due to some changes at the Zur Institute, I've not been able to offer any new CE courses for some time. Of course, my courses that are there are timeless, so please remember you can get 10% off on all the APA continuing education materials at the Zur Institute. Not just the courses based on my interviews. You can click on that banner in our left-hand sidebar or simply go to zurinstitute.com and search through their extensive catalog and then use my discount code at checkout, which is DrDave88. That's DrDave88. I want to give a shout-out to my three social media superhero volunteers. They are Will Smith in London, Rebecca Holland, also in London, and Sylvia Mendoza in Texas. You can find out more about them in our October newsletter. If you aren't receiving the newsletter, you can sign up for it in the upper corner of our left-hand sidebar at the Shrink Wrap Radio website. When you do, you'll receive free access to an audio recording of a dream talk I gave at the University of New Hampshire some years ago. Finally, Shrink Wrap Radio is now available on iHeartRadio. That channel has millions of listeners, but I'm not sure how much trickle down we'll get. When I went there were only 2 randomly chosen episodes from Shrink Wrap Radio. I'm hoping they will make a little more than that available as time goes on. You have to search for it in their podcasts area at iHeartRadio. You can get it through your web browser, if not on an actual radio. I'm not sure it's easy to find Shrink Wrap Radio there. Let me know what you find if you make the attempt.
Hi, this is Clay Cockrell, licensed clinical social worker and founder of the Online Counseling Directory and Podcast. And you are on the couch with Dr. Dave.
I'm going to skip the mail today and just say that you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. Remember that in addition to emails, you can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site, and you can leave voicemail on our message phone at 415-830-4014, or you can use our app for that. Thanks to today's guest, Clay Cockrell, LCSW, for sharing the ins and outs of online counseling and therapy. My next interview will be with Pulitzer Prize-nominated New York Times reporter Alan Schwartz, and we'll be discussing his book, ADHD Nation, Children, Doctors, Big Pharma, and the Making of an American Epidemic. So until then, This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
Been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.